Where are we going? I ask on the air train. The three of us sit side by side, me, Xander, and our bored-looking official, who is youngish and wears the most perfectly ironed uniform I've ever seen. The official answers,
Your meals have been sent to a private dining hall. We'll eat dinner there, and then I'll escort you both back to your homes.
He rarely makes eye contact with us, choosing instead to look past us, out the windows. I don't know whether he intends to make us feel at ease or uncomfortable. So far, he's doing the latter. A private dining hall? I look over at Xander. He raises his eyebrows at me and mouths the words, "Why bother?" and gestures to the official. I try not to laugh. Xander's right. Why go to all the trouble of eating at a private dining hall when this outing is anything but private? I start to feel sorry for all the matchees who have to have their first conversations monitored by the officials over the ports. At least Xander and I have had thousands of conversations before. The dining hall is a small building, one air train stop over, a place where singles sometimes go, where our parents can arrange to have meals in the evening now and then if they'd like to get away. It looks nice, I say in a lame attempt at conversation as we approach the hall. A small green space surrounds the red brick box of a building. In the green space, I catch sight of a flower bed full of the ever-present new roses and also some kind of ethereal wildflower. And then a memory so specific and so clear that it's hard to believe I haven't thought of it until now comes to mind. I remember a night when I was much younger and my parents returned from an evening out. Grandfather had come to stay with Bram and me, and I heard my parents talking with him before my father went to Bram's room and my mother came into mine. A soft pink and yellow bloom fell out of her hair when she leaned over to pull up my blankets. She tucked it quickly back behind her ear, out of sight, and I was too sleepy to ask how she came by the blossom. At the time, it confused me as I drifted off to sleep. How did she get the flower when picking them is forbidden? I forgot the question in my dreams and never asked it upon waking. Now I know the answer. My father sometimes bends the rules for those he loves. For my mother, for grandfather. My father is a little like Xander, the night that he bent the rules to help Em. Xander takes my arm, bringing me back into the present. When he does, I can't help myself. I glance over at the official. He doesn't say anything. The inside of the dining hall looks nicer than a regular meal hall, too.
Look,
Xander says. Flickering lights in the center of each table simulate an old romantic system of lighting. Candles. People look at us as we pass among the tables. We're clearly the youngest patrons there. Most are our parents' age or young couples several years older than Xander and me, couples newly contracted. I see a few people who are probably singles out on recreational dates, but not many. The boroughs in this area are primarily family boroughs, full of parents and youth under the age of 21. Xander notices the staring and stares back, his arm still linked with mine. Under his breath, he whispers to me,
At least everyone at school is pretty much over our match by now. I hate the watching.
I do too. Thankfully, the official doesn't gawk at us. He leads the way through the tables and finds one marked with our names near the back. The waiter arrives with our food almost as soon as we sit down. The simulated candlelight flickers across the round black metal table in front of me. No tablecloths, and the food is regulation food. We'll eat the same thing here that we'd eat at home. That's why it's necessary to book in advance, so the nutrition personnel can get your meal to the right spot. Obviously, dining here doesn't compare at all to the match banquet at City Hall, but it's the second nicest place I've ever eaten in my life.
The food's good and hot,
Xander says as the steam escapes from his foilware container. He peels back the lid and peers inside.
Look at my portion. They want me to bulk up, so they keep giving me more and more.
I glance over at Xander's portion of noodles with sauce. It is enormous. Can you eat all of that?
Are you joking? Of course I can. Xander acts offended. I peel back the foilware and look at my portion. Next to Xander's, it seems minuscule. Maybe I'm making this up, but my portions seem to be smaller lately. I'm not sure why. The hiking and running on the tracker keep me fit. If anything, I should be getting more food, not less. It must be my imagination. The official, looking even less interested than before, twists the noodles from his container on a fork and looks around the room at the other patrons. His food is exactly the same as ours. I guess the myths about certain department's officials eating better than anyone else aren't true. Not when they eat in public, anyway.
How's hiking going?
Xander asks me, popping a bite of noodles into his mouth. I like it, I answer honestly. Except for today.
Even more than swimming?
Xander teases me.
Not that you ever did much of that, I guess. Sitting there on the edge.
I swam, I tell him, teasing back. Sometimes. Anyway, I do like it more than being at the pool.
That's not possible, Xander says. Swimming is the best. I heard that all you've been doing at hiking is climbing that same little hill over and over.
All you do at swimming is swim around the same little pool over and over.
That's different. Water's always moving. It's never the same.
Xander's comment reminds me of what Kai said in the music hall about the songs. I guess that's true, but the hill is always moving too. The wind moves things, and the plants grow and change. I fall silent. Our neatly pressed official tilts his head, listening to our conversation. That's why he's here, isn't it? I move my noodles around on my plate, and the motion makes me think of writing with Kai. One of the noodles is curved like a C. Don't. I have to stop thinking about Kai. Some of my food stubbornly refuses to wrap around my fork. I twirl the utensil around and around and finally give up and shove some noodles into my mouth, the end sticking out. I have to slurp them in. Embarrassing. For some reason, my eyes fill with tears. I put down my fork and Xander reaches over to straighten it. As he does, he looks straight into my eyes and I can see the question there as though he speaks it out loud. What's wrong? Shaking my head slightly, I smile back at him. Nothing. I glance over at our official. He's momentarily distracted, listening to something on his earpiece. Of course, he is still on duty. Xander, why didn't you kiss me the other night? I ask suddenly, since the official isn't listening right at this moment. I should be embarrassed, but I'm not. I want to know.
There were too many people watching.
Xander sounds surprised.
I know the officials don't care, since we're matched, but you know.
He inclines his head slightly toward the official next to us.
It's not the same when you're being watched.
How could you tell?
Haven't you noticed all the officials on our street lately?
Watching my house? Xander raises his eyebrows.
Why would they be watching your house?
Because I read things I shouldn't read and learn things I'm not meant to know, and I might be falling in love with someone else. What I say is, my father. I let my voice trail off. Xander flushes.
Of course. I should have realized. It's not that, at least I don't think so. These are basic level officials, police officers. They've been patrolling a lot more lately, and not just in our borough, in all the boroughs.
Our street was full of officials that night, and I didn't even know. Kai must have known. Maybe that's why he wouldn't come up the porch steps. Maybe that's why he never touches me. He's afraid of being caught. Or maybe it's even more simple than that. Maybe he never wants to touch me. Perhaps to Kai, I am only a friend. A friend who finally wants to know his story. Nothing more. And at first, that's who I was.
I wanted to know more about this boy who lives among us, but who never truly speaks. More about what happened before. I wanted to know more about my mistaken match. But now I feel like finding out about him is one of the ways I find out about myself. I did not expect to love his words. I did not expect to find myself in them. Is falling in love with someone's story the same thing as falling in love with the person himself? Chapter 18. Another air car sits on our street, this time in front of M's house. What's going on? I ask Xander, whose eyes widen with fear. The official with us looks interested, but not surprised. I resist the urge to grab his shirt front tight, wrinkling it in my hands. I hold back from hissing, "Why do you watch us? What do you know?" The door to M's house opens and three officials come out. Our official turns to Xander and me and says, almost abruptly,
"I hope you both had an enjoyable evening. I'll file the report with the matching committee first thing tomorrow."
"Thank you," I say automatically as he turns back to the air train stop. Although I don't know why, I don't feel grateful. The officials at M's house walk across her yard and go to the house next door. They hold a container, something society issued, and they're not smiling. In fact, if I had to say how they looked, I would say they looked sad. I don't like it. "Should we go see if M is all right?" I ask. And as I do, she opens her front door and looks out. She sees Xander and me and hurries across the yard to meet us.
"Kasia, it's all my fault! It's all my fault!"
Em's voice shakes and tears mark her face.
"What's your fault, Em? What happened?"
I glance next door to make sure the officials aren't watching us, but they've already disappeared inside. Em's neighbors opened the door before the officials had to knock, as though they were expected.
"What's this about?"
Xander's voice sounds harsh, and I send him a look, trying to tell him to be patient. Em's face grows even paler, and she grabs my arm. Her voice is hushed.
"The officials are collecting all the artifacts."
"What?" Em's lips tremble.
"They said that I'd been seen with an artifact at the match banquet, and they'd come to collect it. I told them it wasn't mine. I'd borrowed it from you and given it back."
She swallows, and I remember the night of the green tablet. I put my arm around her and glance at Xander. Em keeps speaking, her voice shaky.
"I shouldn't have told them, but I was so scared. Now they're going to take it from you. They're going house to house."
House to house. They'll be at mine soon. I want to comfort Em, but I have to try to save my artifact, futile as the effort might be. I have to go home. I give Em a hug. "Em, it's not your fault. Even if you hadn't told them, they knew I had an artifact. It's registered, and I took it to my banquet." Then I remember something, and fear washes over me. Kai's artifact. I still have it tucked away in my closet. The officials might know about my artifact, but they don't know about Kai's. It could get us both in trouble. How can I hide it? "I have to go home," I say out loud this time. I pull my arm away from M's shoulders and turn toward my house. How long do I have before the officials get there? 5 minutes? M starts crying harder, but I don't have time to reassure her again. I walk as quickly as I can without drawing attention. A few steps later, and Xander is next to me, linking his arm in mine as if we have been on a normal outing and are on our way home.
"Kasia?"
he says. I don't look at him. I can't stop thinking about all that could be lost in a few short moments. Kai is already an aberration. If they find out that he has an artifact, will he become an anomaly? I could cover up for him. I could say that it's mine and I found it when we hiked in the woods. Would they believe me?
"Kasia,"
Xander says again.
"I can hide it for you. Say you've lost it. Make your story convincing."
"I can't let you do that for me."
"You can. I'll wait for you outside while you grab the compact. It's small enough to fit in your hand, right?"
I nod.
When you come back out, act like you're crazy about me, like you hate saying goodbye. Throw your arms around me, drop it down my shirt. I'll take care of it after that.
I've never seen this side of Xander before, I think. And then I instantly realize that I have. When he plays the games, he's like this. Cool and calm and full of strategy and daring. And in the games, at least, his risks almost always pay off. Xander, this isn't a game.
I know that. His face looks grim. I'll be careful.
Are you sure? I shouldn't let him do this. It's weak to consider it. But still, he can take my compact for me. He would save it for me. He would risk this for me.
I'm sure.
Once I close the front door behind me, I run down the hall to my room as fast as I can. No one from my family sees me, for which I'm grateful. With shaking hands, I tear open my closet door and push the sets of plain clothes along the rack until I find the pair where I've hidden Kai's artifact inside the pocket. I open the brown paper envelope and tip it so that the arrow in its case slides out. I shove the envelope into my pocket. I grab the compact from the shelf and look at the two items in my hands. Golden and beautiful. In spite of myself, I'm tempted to give Xander my compact instead of Kai's spinning arrow. But I put the compact onto my bed and close my hand over Kai's artifact. Saving my compact would be selfish. It would only save a thing. But saving Kai's artifact saves both of us from questioning and him from becoming an anomaly. And how can I let them take the last piece of his old life? This is safer for Xander, too. They don't know Kai's artifact exists, so hopefully they won't miss it. My compact will be accounted for and taken away as expected, so they won't look for it or wonder if I've given it to someone else. I run back down the hall and open the front door. Xander, wait! I call out to him, trying to make my voice light. Aren't you going to kiss me goodnight? Xander turns, his face open and natural. I don't think anyone else could see the glint of cunning in his eyes, but I know him so well. I skip down the steps, and he holds out his arms to me. We embrace, his hands at the small of my back and my arms around his neck. I place my hand just under the collar of his plainclothes and open my fingers. The artifact slides down his back, and my palm lies flat against his warm skin. We look each other straight in the eyes for a moment, and then I lean close to his ear. Don't open it, I whisper to Xander. Don't keep it in your house. Bury it or hide it somewhere. It's not what you think. Xander nods. Thank you, I say. And then I kiss him right on the lips, and I mean that kiss. Even though I know I'm falling for Kai, it is impossible not to love Xander for everything he is and everything he does.
Kasia!
Bram calls from the steps. Bram. He's going to lose something today, too. I think of Grandfather's watch and anger rises in me. Do they have to take everything? Xander breaks away from our embrace. He has to hurry to hide the artifact before they get to his house.
Goodbye,
he says with a smile.
Goodbye,
I call back.
Kasia!
Bram calls again, fear in his voice. I glance back down the street, but I don't see any officials yet. They must still be in one of the houses between mine and Em's. Hi, Bram, I say, attempting to sound casual. It's better for us all if he doesn't suspect what Xander and I have done.
They're taking the artifacts, Bram says, voice shaking. They called Papa in to help with the collection.
Of course. I should have realized. They need someone like him to help determine if the artifacts are real or false. Another fear strikes me. Was he supposed to take our artifacts? Did he pretend mine was lost? Did he lie for Bram or me? How many stupid mistakes is he willing to make for those he loves? Oh no, I say, trying to act as though all of this is new to me. Hopefully Bram won't find out that Em told me earlier. Did he take ours with him?
No,
Bram says.
They won't let anyone collect from their own families.
Did he know this was going to happen?
No. When the call came over the port, he was shocked. But he had to report right away. He told me to listen to the officials and not to worry.
I want to put my arm around Bram and comfort him, because he is about to lose something, something important. So I do, even though there is no time. I hold on to my brother, and for the first time in years, he hugs me back, tight, the way he did when he was a little boy and I was the big sister he admired more than anyone else in the world. I wish I could have saved his watch, but it was the wrong color, silver instead of gold, and the officials know about it. There was nothing I could do, I tell myself, trying to believe it. We hold on for a few seconds, and then I pull away and look Bram in the eyes. Go get it, I say to him. Go look at it for the last few minutes you have, and remember it. Remember it. Bram doesn't pretend to hide the tears in his eyes now. Bram, I say, and I hug him again. Bram, something bad could have happened to the watch even without this. You could have lost it. You could have broken it. But this way, you can look at it one last time. It's never really lost to you as long as you remember it.
Can't I try to hide it?
Bram asks. He blinks and a tear escapes. He brushes it away angrily.
Will you help me?
No, Bram, I say gently. I wish we could, but it's too dangerous. What I risk has a limit. I won't risk Bram. When the officials arrive at our house and come in the door, they find Bram and me sitting on the divan side by side. Bram holds silver, I hold gold. We both look up when the officials who travel in a pack of three, the way they did when they came to see me sort, walk through the door. But then Bram's gaze flickers back to the polished silver surface in his hands, and I glance down at the gold one in mine. My face looks back at me. Distorted as it is by the curve of the compact surface, I can still see my features the way I did at the match banquet. Then, the question I asked myself was, do I look pretty? Now, the question I ask is, do I look strong? As I look at my eyes and the set of my jaw, it seems to me that the answer is yes. A short, balding official speaks first.
The government has decided that artifacts are promoting inequality among members of society, he says. We request that everyone turn in their artifacts for catalog and display at the museum in each city. Our records indicate that there are two legal artifacts in this residence,
a tall official adds. Does he stress the word legal, or is it my imagination?
One silver watch, one gold compact.
I don't say anything, and neither does Bram.
Are these the artifacts?
The bald official asks, looking at the items we hold. He seems weary. This must be a terrible job. I imagine my father taking artifacts from people, old people like grandfather, children like Bram, and I feel sick. I nod. Do you want them now?
You may retain them for a few more minutes. We are required to do a quick search of the house.
Bram and I both sit quietly while they go through our house. It doesn't take long.
Nothing valuable here,
one of them says quietly to another in the hallway. My heart is on fire, and I have to keep my mouth shut tight so that I don't try to burn these officials with the flames. That's what you think, I say to myself. You think there's nothing here because we're not putting up a fight. But there are words in our heads that no one else knows. And my grandfather died on his terms, not yours. We have things of value, but you can never find them because you don't even know how to look. They walk back into the room and I stand up. Bram does too. The officials wave detection instruments around us to make sure we haven't concealed anything on our persons. Of course, they find nothing. The female official comes forward, and I see a pale band of skin on her finger, where a ring must have been. She lost something today, too. I hold out the compact, thinking about how my artifact has traveled from a time before the society, from one family member to another, to me. And now I have to let it go. The official takes my compact. She takes the watch from Bram. You can come see them in the museum, anytime you like.
It's not the same, he says,
and then he straightens his shoulders. And oh, I see Grandfather, I do. My heart swells with the thought that perhaps he isn't completely gone after all.
You can take it, Bram says, but it will always be mine.
Bram goes to his room. The heaviness in his step and the way he closes the door tells me that he wants to be alone. I feel like punching something, but I shove my hands into my pockets instead. There I find the brown paper envelope, a crumpled shell that once contained something valuable and beautiful. It's only an envelope, not an artifact. It didn't even register on the official's detection instruments. I pull it out and tear it in half, angrily. I want to rip it up and shred it to pieces. The jagged line along the envelope pleases me. It feels good to destroy. I get ready to make another wound. I look down for another place to tear. My breath catches in my throat when I see what I almost ruined. Another part of Kai's story. There's something else the officials have missed. Drowning, drinking, the words at the top say. The letters strong and beautiful, like he is. I think of his handwriting them, his skin brushing the napkin. I bite my lip and look at the picture below. Two Kais again, the younger one and the one now, both of them with hands still cupped. The background in the first one is a spare, bare landscape, the bones of rocks rising behind Kai. In the second picture, he's here in the burrow. I see a maple tree behind him. Rain falls in both pictures, but in the first one, his mouth is open, his head tipped back. He drinks from the sky. In the second one, his head is down, his eyes panicked. Water falls thick around him, streams off him like a waterfall. There's too much rain here. He could drown. When it rains, I remember, are the words written at the bottom. I look up from the words and out the window where the burning evening sun sets in a clear sky. There is no trace of clouds, but I promise myself that when it rains, I will remember too. This paper, these pictures and words, this piece of him. Chapter 19. The air train into the city the next morning is almost silent. No one wants to talk about what happened in the burrow last night. Those who gave up their artifacts are hushed with the loss. Those who never had any to begin with are quiet out of respect. Or perhaps out of satisfaction, because now everything has been equalized. Before he gets off at his stop for swimming, Xander leans over to kiss my cheek and says softly, "Under the new roses, in front of Kai's house." He steps off the air train and disappears with the other students while I ride on toward the Arboretum. Questions crowd my mind. How did Xander hide the artifact in the Markham's flower bed unseen? Does he know it belongs to Kai, or is it coincidence that he picked the Markham's house as the hiding place? Does he know what I'm starting to feel for Kai? Whatever Xander knows or guesses, one thing is certain. He couldn't have picked a better hiding place. We're all charged with keeping our own yards neat and clean. If Kai digs in his own yard, no one will suspect anything. I just have to tell him where to look. Like everyone else, Kai stares out the window as we glide toward the Arboretum. Did he see Xander's kiss? Did he care? He does not meet my eyes.
"We're pairing off for this next round of hiking," the officer says once we reach the bottom of the hill. "You are each partnered with another hiker according to ability assessed by analyzing the data I collected from your earlier hikes. That means Kai is paired with Kasia, Livy is paired with Tay."
Livy's face falls, and I try to keep mine expressionless.
The officer finishes reading his list.
You have a different goal on the hill, he says. You won't ever see the top here. The society has asked us to use our hiking time to mark obstacles on the hill.
He gestures to the bags piled next to him. They hold strips of red cloth.
Every pair takes a bag. Tie the markers on branches near fallen trees, in front of particularly bad thickets, etc. Later, a survey crew will come through. They're going to clear and pave a path on the hill.
They're going to pave the hill. At least Grandfather doesn't have to see it.
What if we run out of cloths? Lon whines. They haven't cleared the hill in years. There are going to be obstacles everywhere. We might as well mark every tree we see.
If you run out of cloths, use rocks to make cairns,
the officer says. He turns to Kai.
Do you know how to make a cairn?
There's the briefest of hesitations before Kai answers.
Yes.
Show them.
Kai gathers a few rocks from the ground around us and stacks them, largest first, in a small pile. His hands are quick and sure, the way they are when he's teaching me to write. The tower looks precarious, but does not fall.
See? It's simple,
the officer says.
I'll blow my whistle later, and that means you need to start making your way back. You blow your whistles if you get lost.
He gives us each a standard-issue metal whistle.
It shouldn't be hard. Just head back down the mountain the way you came.
The officer's thinly veiled disgust for us used to amuse me. Today, I understand it. I feel disgust when I think of how we climb our little hills when the officials say the word. How we hand over our most precious items at their bidding. How we never, ever fight. We are barely out of view of the others when Kai turns to me and I turn to him, and for a moment, I think he is going to touch me. I sense, more than see, his hand moves slightly and then drop back down. I feel a disappointment deeper than the disappointment I felt this morning when I opened my closet and did not see the compact resting there.
Are you all right?
He asks.
Last night, when they searched the houses, I didn't know until after I came home.
I'm fine.
My artifact.
Is that all he cares about? I whisper fiercely. It's in your flower bed, buried under the new roses. Dig it up, and then you'll have it back.
I don't care about the artifact,
he says. And although he still does not touch me, I am warmed at the fire in his eyes.
I couldn't sleep all night, worrying that I'd gotten you in trouble. I care about you.
Those words are quiet here under the trees, but they sing loudly in my heart. Louder than all the 100 songs caroled all at once. And his eyes are shadowed underneath from thinking about me. I want to reach up and touch that skin under his eyes, the one place I've seen any vulnerability in him, make him feel better. And then I could run my fingers there, across his cheekbones, to his lips, to the place where his jaw meets his neck, where his neck meets his shoulder line. I like the places where one part meets another, I think. Eyes to cheek, wrist to hands. Somewhat shocked at my own thoughts, I take a step back.
How did you?
Someone helped me.
Xander,
he says. How does he know? Xander, I agree. Neither of us speaks for a moment. I stand back, seeing him whole. Then he turns and begins to walk through the trees again. It is slow going. The underbrush grows so tangled here that it's more of a climb than a hike. Trees that fell have not been cleared away and lie like giant bones across the forest floor. Yesterday, I begin. I have to ask, as inconsequential as the question now seems, were you teaching Livy how to write? Kai stops again and looks at me. His eyes seem almost green under the canopy of the trees.
Of course not,
he says.
She wanted to know what we were doing. She saw us writing. We weren't careful enough.
I feel stupid and relieved.
Oh.
I told her I'd been showing you how to draw the trees.
He picks up a stick next to me and starts moving it around to make a pattern that does look remarkably like leaves. Then he places the stick down as the trunk of the tree. I keep looking at his hands after he is finished, not sure what else to do. No one draws once they're out of first school.
I know,
he says.
But at least it's not expressly forbidden.
I reach into the bag I carry for a piece of red cloth and tie it on a fallen tree near Kai. I keep my eyes down, looking now at my fingers as they twist the fabric into a knot. I'm sorry about the way I acted yesterday. When I straighten up, Kai has already moved on.
Don't be,
Kai says, pulling a tangle of climbing green vines away from a shrub so that we can pass through. He throws the vines at me, and I catch them in surprise.
It's good to see you jealous once in a while.
He smiles, sun in the woods. I try not to smile in return. Who said I was jealous?
No one,
he says.
I could tell. I've been watching people for a long time.
Why did you let me hold on to it anyway? I ask him. The case with the arrow. It's beautiful, but I wasn't sure.
No one but my parents know that I have it,
he says.
When Em gave me the compact to give back to you, I noticed how much alike they were. I wanted you to see it.
His voice sounds lonely all of a sudden, and I can almost hear another sentence, the one that instinct still keeps him from saying. I wanted you to see me. Because isn't this what it's all about? The golden case with the arrow, the bits of story offered here and there? Kai wants someone to see him. He wants me to see him. My hands ache to reach for him, but I can't bring myself to betray Xander in that way after everything he has done. After he saved us both, Kai and me, just last night. But there is something I can continue to give Kai that is purely mine, that doesn't belong to Xander. The poem. I only mean to tell him a few more lines, but once I start telling him, it's hard to hold back the words. And I say the whole thing. The words go together. Some things are created to be together.
The words aren't peaceful,
Kai says. I know.
Then why do they make me feel calm?
Kai asks in wonder.
I don't understand.
In silence, we push our way through more undergrowth, the poem heavy in our minds. Finally, I know what it is I want to say. I think it's because when we hear it, we know we're not the only ones who ever felt this way.
Tell it to me again,
Kai asks softly. His breath catches. His voice is husky. All the rest of the time, until we hear the officer's whistle, we move up the hill repeating the poem back to each other like a song that just the two of us know. Before we leave the forest, Kai finishes teaching me to write my name in the soft dirt underneath one of the fallen trees. We crouch down, red cloths in hand, acting as though we are tying them on in case anyone comes by and sees us. It takes me a little while to learn S, but I like the way it looks, like something leaning into the wind. The clean line and dot of I is easy to master, and I already know how to write A. I write each letter in my name and connect them together, Kai's hand near mine to guide me. We don't quite touch, but I feel the warmth of his hand, the length of his body crouched behind me as I write, Kasha. My name, I say, leaning back and looking at the letters. They are wavery, less sure than the letters Kai writes. Someone passing by might not even recognize mine as letters at all. Still, I can tell what they say. What next?
Now,
Kai says,
we go back to the beginning. You know A, tomorrow we'll do B. Once you know them all, you can write your own poems.
But who would read them? I ask, laughing.
I would,
he says. He gives me another folded napkin. There, between greasy thumbprints and traces of food, is more of Kai for me to see. I put the napkin in my pocket, and I think of Kai writing out his story with his red hands, seared from the heat of the job he does. I think of him risking everything each time he slips one napkin into his pocket. All these years he's been so careful, but now he's willing to take a chance. Because he's found someone who wants to know. Someone he wants to tell. Thank you, I say, for teaching me how to write.
Thank you,
he answers. There is a light in his eyes, and I am the one who put it there.
For saving my artifact, and for the poem.
There's more to say, but we're learning how to speak. Together we step out of the trees, not touching. Not yet. Chapter 20. I walk home from the air train stop with M after school and sorting. Once the others who came with us have gone ahead or fallen behind, M puts her hand on my arm. I'm so sorry, she says quietly. M, don't worry about it anymore. I'm not angry. I look her in the eye so that she knows I mean it, but her eyes are still sad. So many times in my life, I've felt as though looking at M is like seeing another variation of myself. But I don't feel that way now. Too much has changed in the past month. Still, M is my best girlfriend. Growing apart doesn't change the fact that for a long time we grew side by side. Our roots will always be tangled. I'm glad for that. You don't have to keep apologizing, I tell her. I'm happy I lent it to you. At least we both got to enjoy it before they took it away. I still don't understand, Em says softly. They have plenty of displays in the museum. It doesn't make any sense. I've never heard anything so close to insubordination come out of Em's mouth before, and I grin at her. Maybe we aren't becoming so different after all. What are we doing tonight? I ask, changing the subject. M seems relieved about the shift in topic. I talked to Xander today, and he wants to go to the game center tonight. What do you think? What I really think is that I'd like to go back to the top of the first little hill. The thought of being in that center with its stuffiness and crowds when we could be sitting and talking under a clean night sky seems like more than I can take. But I can do it. I can do whatever I need to in order to keep things normal. I have Kai's words to read at the end of the night, and perhaps, if I'm lucky, I'll see Kai himself later. I hope he comes with us. M interrupts my thoughts by saying, Look, your mother's waiting for you. M's right. My mother sits on the steps of the house with her face turned in our direction. When she sees me looking at her, she stands up, waves, and starts walking toward us. I wave back, and M and I pick up the pace a little. She's back, I say out loud, and it isn't until I hear the surprise in my voice that I realize part of me worried that she would stay away forever. Was she gone? M asks, and I realize that my mother's absence is likely one of those things that we aren't supposed to mention outside of our family. Not that the officials said that explicitly. It's simply the kind of thing we've learned to keep to ourselves. Back early from work, I clarify. It's not even a lie. M says goodbye and goes into her house. Her maple tree isn't going to make it, I think, noticing that even in the middle of summer, the tree only has about 10 green, tired leaves. Then I look toward my house, where the tree grows full and the flowers are beautiful, and my mother comes to meet me. This reminds me of times when I was very small in first school, and my mother's work hours ended before I got home. She and Bram sometimes walked up the street to meet my train. They never made it far because Bram stopped to look at everything along the way.
That kind of attention to detail might be a sign that he's meant to be a sorter, my father used to say.
Until Bram got older and it became apparent that he lost his ability to pay attention to detail along with his baby teeth. When I reach my mother, she hugs me right there on the sidewalk. Oh, Kasia, she says. Her face looks pale and tired.
I'm so sorry I missed your first official outing with Xander.
You missed something else last night, too, I say,
my face against her shoulder. She is taller than I am, and I don't think I will ever catch up. I'm slight and short like my father's family, like grandfather. I smell my mother's familiar smell of flowers and clean fabric, and I breathe in deeply. I'm so glad she's back.
I know.
My mother never speaks against the government. The most defiant she's ever been was when the officials searched my father. I don't expect her to rant and rave about the unfairness of the officials taking the artifacts, and she doesn't. It occurs to me that if she did, she'd be ranting and raving against her own husband. He is, after all, an official too. Though he isn't the one who held out his hand and asked us to drop our prized possessions into it, he did that to other people. When my father came home last night, he gave Bram and me each a long hug and then went straight to his room without saying anything. Maybe because he couldn't stand to see the pain in our faces and remember that he had caused that same pain in others.
I'm sorry, Kasia, my mother says now as we walk home. I know how much that compact meant to you.
I feel sorry for Bram.
I know. I do too.
When we enter the front door, I hear the chime that means our food has arrived. But when I go into the kitchen, only two portions sit in the delivery area. What about Papa and Bram?
Papa requested dinner early so he and Bram could go for a walk before Bram's free rec hours.
Really? I ask. We don't often make such requests.
Yes. Your father thought that Bram could use something special after everything that's happened lately.
I'm happy, especially for Bram's sake, that the nutrition officials granted Papa's request. Why didn't you go too?
I wanted to see you.
She smiles at me and then looks around the kitchen.
We haven't eaten together in a long time. And of course, I want to hear about your outing with Xander.
We sit across from each other at the table, and I notice again how tired she looks. Tell me about your trip, I say, before she can ask about last night. What did you see?
I'm still not sure, she says softly, almost to herself.
Then she straightens up.
We went to another arboretum to look at some crops. After that, we had to go to some farmlands. It all took some time.
But now everything's back to normal, right?
For the most part. I have to write a formal report and submit it to the officials in charge of the other arboretum.
What's the report about?
I'm afraid that's confidential information,
my mother says regretfully. We both fall silent, but it is a good silence, a mother-daughter one. Her thoughts are far away somewhere, perhaps back at the arboretum. Maybe she's writing the report in her mind. That's all right with me, though. I relax and let my own thoughts go where they want, which is to Kai.
Thinking about Xander,
my mother says, giving me a knowing smile.
I always daydreamed about your father, too.
I smile back. There's no point telling her that I'm thinking about the wrong boy. No, not the wrong boy. Kai may be an aberration, but there's nothing about him that is defective. It's our government and their classification system and all their systems that are wrong, including the matching system. But if the system is wrong and false and unreal, then what about the love between my parents? If their love was born because of the society, can it still be real and good and right? This is the question that I can't get out of my mind. I want the answer to be yes, that their love is true. I want it to have beauty and reality independent of anything else. I should get ready to go to the game center, I tell her, and she yawns. You should go to sleep. We can talk more tomorrow.
Well, maybe I'll rest for a little while,
she says. We both stand up. I take her foilware container to the recycling bin for her, and she carries my water bottle to the sterilizer for me.
Come say goodbye before you leave, though, won't you?
Of course. My mother goes into her room, and I slip into mine. I have a few minutes before I'm due to meet everyone.
Do I have time to read a little more of Kai's story? I decide that I do. I pull the crumpled napkin from my pocket. I want to know more about Kai before I see him tonight. I feel as if the two of us are our true selves when we hike in the forests on the hills. When we're with everyone else on Saturday nights, though, it becomes difficult. We go through a different forest that is complicated and full of tangles, and there are no stone cairns to guide us except the ones we build ourselves. Sitting on my bed to read, I glance again at the spot in my closet where I kept the compact. I feel a sharp pain of loss and turn back to Kai's story. But as I read and the tears slip down my cheeks, I realize that I do not know anything about loss. In the middle of the crease, Kai drew a village. Little houses, little people. But all the people lie prone on their backs. No one stands straight except the two Kais. The young one's hands are no longer empty. They carry something. One hand holds the word mother, slumping over the edge of his hand, shaped a little like a body. The top of the T tips up, like an arm flung askew. The other hand holds the word father, and that word lies still too. And the young Kai's shoulders are bent with the weight of these two little words, and his face is still tipped to the sky, where I see now the rain has turned into something dark, something deadly and solid. Ammunition, I think. I've seen it in the showing. The older Kai has turned his face away from the village in the middle, from the other boy. His hands are no longer open. They are clenched. Behind him, people in official uniforms watch him. His lips curve in a smile that never touches his eyes. He wears plain clothes, a line indicating the crisp crease where he's ironed them neat. At first, when the rain fell, from the sky so wide and deep, it smelled like sage, my favorite smell. I went up on the plateau to watch it come, to see the gifts it always brought. But this rain changed from blue to black, and left nothing. There's a drought of officials at the game center, even though the center itself brims with people playing, winning, losing. I see three officials watching the largest of the game tables. They look earnest and on edge in their white uniforms, their faces showing more stress than usual. This is strange. Usually we have 12 or more lower-level officials in the center, keeping the peace, keeping score. Where are the rest of them tonight? Somewhere, things aren't going quite right. But here, as far as I'm concerned, at least one thing has. Kai's with us. I look at him once as we weave our way through the masses of people, following Xander, hoping that Kai understands from that look that I have read his story, that I care. He walks right behind me, and I want to reach back and take his hand, but there are too many people. The one thing I can do for Kai is to help keep him safe, to hold on to what I want to say until there is a good place to say it, and to remember the words he wrote, the pictures he made, even though I wish that part of the story had never happened to him. His parents died. He saw it happen. Death came from the sky, and that's what he remembers, every time it rains. Xander stops, and so we all do too. To my surprise, he gestures to a game table where the games played are one-on-one. Games Xander doesn't usually play. He likes to take on a group, to win when the stakes are higher and more players are involved. It's a better test of his abilities, more challenging, more variables, less personal.
You want to play?
Xander asks. I turn to see who he means. Kai.
All right,
Kai says, without hesitation, nothing revealed in his voice. He keeps his eyes on Xander, waiting for the next move.
What kind of game do you want to play? Skill? Or chance?
Is there a trace of challenge in Xander's voice? His face remains perfectly even, as does Kai's.
I don't care,
Kai answers.
How about a game of chance, then?
Xander says, which surprises me again. Xander hates games of chance. He much prefers ones that involve actual skill.
Em and Piper and I stay, watching, as Xander and Kai sit down and scan their cards into the data pod at the table. Xander sets out the playing cards, red with black markings in the center, first stacking the edges even with two sharp hits of the deck against the metal.
Want to go first?
Xander asks Kai, and Kai nods and reaches to draw.
What game are they playing?
Someone asks next to me. Livy. She's here for Kai, I'm sure of it, her eyes possessive as she watches his hands over the cards. His hands are not yours to watch, I think to her, and I remember again that they aren't mine either. I should be watching Xander. I should be hoping for Xander to win.
Prisoner's Dilemma, Em says next to me. They're playing Prisoner's Dilemma.
What's that? Livy asks. She doesn't know the game? I turn to her in surprise. It's one of the simplest, most common games. Em tries to explain it to Livy in a low voice so she doesn't disturb the players.
They each put down a card at the same time. If they both have an even card, they each get 2 points. If they're both odd, then they each get 1 point.
Livy interrupts Em.
What if one has even and one has odd?
If one is even and one is odd, the person who puts down the odd card gets 3 points. The person who puts down the even one gets 0.
Livy's eyes fix on Kai's face. Jealousy. I think that even if she sees him in the same amount of detail that I do, which I doubt, she doesn't know anything about him. Would she still be so interested in Kai if she knew about his status as an aberration? I have a thought that strikes me cold. Would I be so interested if I didn't know that he's an aberration? I never paid Kai particular attention before I knew about his classification. And before you saw his face on the microcard, I remind myself. Naturally, that piqued your interest. Besides, you weren't supposed to be interested in anyone until you were matched. I feel a little sick thinking that Livy might see Kai's true worth in a way that is somehow more pure. She's simply interested in him. No hidden reasons, no tangles, no extra layers beneath her basic attraction to him. But then again, I realize, I never know. She could be hiding something, as I am. We could all be hiding something. I turn my attention back to the game, and I watch Kai's and Xander's faces closely. Neither one of them blinks an eye, pauses before a move, shows their hand. In the end, it doesn't matter. Kai and Xander end the rounds with an even number of points. They've each won and lost in equal amounts of hands.
Let's go walk around for a minute,
Xander says, reaching for my hand. I want to look at Kai before I twine my fingers with Xander's, but I don't. I have to play the game, too. Surely Kai will understand. But would Xander? If he knew about Kai and me and the words we share on the hill? I push the thought away as I walk from the table with Xander. Livy immediately slides into his place and starts up a conversation with Kai. Xander and I go out in the hallway alone. I wonder if he's about to kiss me, and I wonder what I'm going to do if he does. But then he whispers to me instead, his words soft and close.
Kai throws the games.
What?
He loses the games on purpose.
You tied. He didn't lose. I don't know what Xander's getting at.
Not tonight, because it wasn't a game of skill. Those are the ones he usually throws. I've been watching him for a while. He's careful about how he does it, but I'm sure that's what he's doing.